Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. Hey, are you busy right now? I bet most of you answered yes, and even if you're not busy right now, you probably will be soon. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next Monday, maybe after your vacation. Heck, I've been on vacations where I'm so busy that I almost yearn for the return to work because, well, even though I'd be back at work, I wouldn't be as busy as I was on that vacation. Ever since the last episode, I've had a pile of projects come up at work and at home, which have been taking up a huge amount of time here and there. Thankfully, I like projects. So this isn't a bad thing, except it does cut into my ability to put podcasts together. The work things, well, I won't bore you with those so much. They're work things that need to be done, and to be honest, they're kind of exciting after all. So this is a bit of a catch-up between you and me, dear listeners. I'm not looking for excuses for why this podcast is so late, but I am offering you some reasons. And I might just be able to make those reasons interesting and, perhaps, entertaining. I'm not a workaholic. I play far too much Nintendo Switch for that to be the case. It's just one of these points in my life where there are so many things I just want to do, or at least fiddle with for a while. We're going to touch on a lot of these topics, but we'll do it quickly. I don't want to waste your time, you know. And hey, you might find some of these projects useful in your own world. Because if the projects are holding up the podcast, then make the projects part of the podcast. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 55, At Odds with Odds and Ends. I'm Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, welcoming you back, at last, to the show that explores the intersections between libraries and technology, and is all about living the high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. Hello out there in electric library land. Cyberpunk Librarian is coming at you through the magic of RSS and MP3, and we are back on the fiber, rolling down the wireless straight into your ear holes. And if we're rolling into any other holes, then, darling, you have the headphones on the wrong part of your body. So, winter finally came to the Phoenix Mesa area, and temps dropped just above freezing a few days ago, which is the super sucks because the week before we were basking in the mid-80s, or right around 28 degrees for the proper thinking parts of the world. It was gorgeous, and then we woke up to rain and cold. So, whatever things you are doing where you are, I hope you're keeping warm or staying cool, whichever your preference happens to be. Right on then, lovelies. We've got a big show with a lot of things to talk about. I wanted to catch up and reconnect with all y'all and give you a peek into what I've been doing and the things I've been up to. Ultimately, I want you to see that I haven't just been sitting around playing the Nintendo Switch and the Xbox One and watching Wonder Woman on Blu-ray in permanent loop mode. So think of this as just us sitting down to coffee and a chat at a local coffee shop. If you happen to be sitting in a local coffee shop while you're listening to this, well, you got the ambiance absolutely correct. Normally, I'd break the show into two or three parts, but if I were to do that this time, we'd be looking at more like eight parts. I mean, I could do that. I could. But I won't. Because that is madness and not the type of madness that we prefer around here. So rather than doing that, let's just hit these points like the kids do on YouTube with a countdown and some stinger music. I will not, however, be throwing up a cool animation bit to go with it because, well, this is audio and we can't do that here. So, grab yourself a cuppa and let's talk. Here are eight things, in no particular order, that have been going on around my world, in my head, and on my computers. Number 8. Okay, so while this list isn't in any real particular order, I wanted to put this thing out front and center because it kind of took me by surprise, and it definitely changed my life. At the beginning of February, I received the results of some run-of-the-mill yearly blood work from my annual physical, and they diagnosed me as pre-diabetic. Now, I will totally admit that I put on a few pounds over the holiday season, and I was working on removing them, making slow but steady progress. I'm a runner. I like to run. But these results kind of changed all of that. The doctor recommended that I watch my carbs and sugars and bring my weight down a bit. So I kicked that into high gear. I'd cut my sugar quite a bit already. I wasn't drinking sodas all that often, and I was watching my intakes of, you know, sweets, sugary foods, stuff like that. But looking back, I was eating what you might call a heroic amount of carbs. It wasn't unusual for me to eat a bowl of cereal for breakfast, go to work and have a hamburger for lunch, and then come home and make pasta that I would wash down with a beer. That's insane, and it was hurting my health in ways that I just did not realize. Now, I thought I had things under control because I was running quite a bit. I will typically run every other day to a distance of 5 to 8 kilometers, so long as it's not too cold outside. And remember, in the Phoenix area, it's only too cold outside for maybe 10 to 12 weeks of the year. But that wasn't enough, and the day after the Super Bowl, I went on a radically low-carb diet. No more beer, no more bread, no more sandwiches or pasta, and no more breakfast cereal. I start my day with a low-carb yogurt and coffee along with the occasional egg. In any style, hard-boiled, sometimes I scramble it, sometimes it's over easy, whatever. My lunch is switched from burgers and sandwiches to hard-boiled eggs, meat, and cheese. I started cooking low-carb dinners and, oddly enough, the family actually seems to like them. It's not unusual for me to go through a day consuming less than 20 grams of carbs. The day after the Super Bowl, I weighed myself and I was 163 pounds. My quote-unquote normal weight was anywhere between 155 and 160. As I record this, I've lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 pounds, and I weighed myself just before the show, and I'm about 145. I seriously cannot remember the time when I ever weighed less than 150. So there's no secret here, and while that sounds like a lot of weight to lose in a short time, it's not really that dramatic when you realize that I added something extra to the diet. See, lots of people go on low-carb diets, and they will lose weight. And that's great, but typically, it's just the diet. That's all they do. Me, I kept running. And when you go running without any carbs in your body, well, your body only has one other fuel source to turn to, and that's fat. If you've never done anything like this, let me tell you, there is a weird feeling for a day or two as your body switches from burning carbs to burning fat. My first few runs like that were just weird. I wasn't slower. I wasn't any faster. My time per kilometer actually remained pretty constant. I get anywhere from, you know, 5 minutes and 55 seconds to 6 minutes and 10 seconds per kilometer. But it didn't feel the same. At the end of the run, I felt like there was a burning in my midsection that I had never felt before. It's hard to describe, but so far I'm well on the track to my target weight of about 140 pounds. Anyway, I'll not dwell on this stuff because it's kind of boring. But let me tell you, I'm not going to just let diabetes walk into my life and start screwing things around, not when I can do something about it. And if you're wondering if I miss anything on this diet, well, yes, I do miss beer because I do like very good beer. But I'll allow myself a beer every so often after I hit that target weight. I missed pasta, but since I discovered the magic of zucchini noodles, I'm doing pretty well on that front too. If there's anything I crave, something that I just really want sometimes and just really sort of cannot have, it's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches of all things. But seeing as how that's basically candy on bread, I'll have to make those into an occasional treat, and likely work around them with a lower carb intake over the next day or so. Okay, fine. Let's leave diabetes and diets behind and move on to something a hell of a lot more interesting. Number 7. Remember blogging? Blogging was that thing we did back in the early 2000s where we all had our own website and we wrote things on them. We had static sites we updated by hand, or we even had little programs like Easy Blogs that helped us create more dynamic sites when we didn't want to learn PHP and MySQL. Blogs were everywhere, and it was actually kind of radical. You could put anything out there you wanted, and people could see it. Granted, not everyone would, but that's fine. It offered people a voice that they did not previously have, and an avenue to share that didn't exist before. I used to blog almost every damn day, and I loved it. Then along came things like MySpace, Twitter, Facebook, and so on, and blogging moved into social networks, which might have been okay, except with the social networks came the algorithms. We'll talk more about that later, actually, but the thing is, you can write and share and post to social networks, and your friends and family and followers might not see it, because it didn't get caught up in the algorithm. I started thinking to myself, you know, I don't want to write this post on Facebook, or make a Twitter thread, or anything like that. I have a website. It's called Cyberpunk Librarian, and if you've not heard of it, you can find it at cyberpunklibrarian.com. I have a place to write and a place to share, and it happens to be my home on the web. I really wanted to get back into semi-regular blogging, and instead of just thinking about posting something to Twitter or sharing it on Facebook or whatever, I wanted to write a good, old-fashioned, Pepperidge Farm Remembers zippity-doo-dah blog post. So I did. And then I did it again, and then again. You'll find links in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast if you're interested. There will be more posts to come. I just took a little time off to work on this show. But you might be wondering, why blogging? It seems so, I don't know, retro these days. Well, that has a lot to do with our next topic. Number 6. A while back, like October of 2017, I read a comic by a guy named Matthew Inman. He's the creator of a popular comic called The Oatmeal, and it's the kind of comic that swings freely between points autobiographical, nonsensical, surreal, and geeky. The comic is often hilarious, as well as insightful, and this particular comic strip happened to be both, with a heavy emphasis on the insightfulness. It's called Reaching People on the Internet, and it seriously touched a nerve with me. I've linked it in the show notes, and you should definitely check it out, because I'm not going to do a particularly great summary of it here, but I am going to try. Basically, the hero of our comic, a creator, makes a thing on the internet. At one point, he shared this new thing on his website. But then he starts sharing it on what is obviously Facebook. And that's fine for a while until he realizes that his followers on Facebook aren't seeing his new things anymore. But they could, you see, if he paid a fee to boost the post. And then a percentage of his followers would get to see the new thing. I get this every time I post an update to the Cyberpunk Librarian Facebook page. Hey everyone, there's a new episode! And Facebook wants money to boost the post so more followers will see it. Hey everyone, there's a new blog post, and Facebook will gladly show it to you so long as I pay. And if you're one of that lucky percentage, you get to scroll by it on your feed. Hey everyone, I made a... Hello? 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 Is anyone there? In a beautiful twist of technology, after he shared this comic on Facebook, he indeed got a message from Facebook telling him that this post was doing well, quite well. But it could do even better for $2,000. This is the internet I fear, and it's an internet we're dangerously close to. It's a place we seem to skirt over and over again as it's happened before with AOL, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, and now Facebook. We all flock to a thing, and we meet up there, and we all start sharing things. We talk, we post, we repost, and cross-post. and we're slowly sucked into the place, and that place starts to become the gatekeeper of all we see. You might follow me on Facebook at the Cyberpunk Librarian page, and I would bet you've missed posts because Facebook just didn't show them to you, even though you liked the page, and you thus asked Facebook to show me the content from that page. No pay, no play, and fewer views. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So I'm going to leave Facebook. Personally, I pretty much already have. The only thing I get on there anymore to do is the Cyberpunk Librarian page. Lots of people are already doing this, so it's not really a, you know, cavalier thing anymore. And I know that that's keeping some of those high-powered executives up at night. Facebook never had a downward user trend until recently, and I think I know some of the reasons why. It was actually the reason that made me seriously examine why I go there. See, I've long said that I hate Facebook, but that's where I have to go to see what my family and friends are doing. But the thing is, Facebook is failing at that, and failing pretty badly. I don't get to see my niece's kids, my friends' projects, or my family's pictures. Or at least I don't get to see them unless I go looking for them. I didn't used to have to go looking for them, but now Facebook decides what I get to see by default. I can tune things a bit, but they always seem to revert back to the way Facebook wants it. That's the thing. I'm going there to keep up with friends and family, but I literally wound up searching for a family member and a friend on the same day, because I thought maybe they had left Facebook. After all, I hadn't seen anything from them in a long time. No, they were still there. They were still posting and doing their thing. Facebook decided it wasn't important enough for me to see it. And you know what? Screw that. So, I'm going to be closing down the Cyberpunk Librarian page on Facebook. Not today, not tomorrow, but pretty soon. And I'll give you all plenty of notice. I was hoping that MZ would take off and become a serious competitor, but no, that didn't happen. And in a way, I'm okay with that. Because it seems to be an online law of the cyberverse that the bigger a social network becomes, the worse it gets. I think that had happened to MZ too, sooner or later. Would you like to follow me and see what I'm doing and never miss a thing? Then I recommend the free, easy, and always available way to do it. It's called RSS. You got this podcast via RSS, and you get all kinds of stuff via RSS if you like. I'll post some great, free, and inexpensive RSS programs in the show notes. You can subscribe to webcomics, websites, blogs, podcasts, and more, and you'll get to see it all. Because that new content just blows out of the website via RSS and into your reader. It's like tuning your radio to a given station. You'll always hear everything on that station because you've tuned into the signal. So, tune into the site, the show, and do the same for all your other favorite websites. You don't have to force your favorite creators to pay some service so you can see the stuff you enjoy. Oh, and as an aside, I caught that comic from the oatmeal because it dropped into my RSS feeds. I saw it that morning, and Matt Inman didn't have to pay a dime for that. Number 5. This one is really quick because I don't want to share a whole lot about it just yet. Some of you might have picked up on the fact that I love ambient and space music and that I occasionally compose and record ambient and space music myself. I'm working on a new album of space music that will not only be relaxing, I hope, but also tell a story. Don't worry, this isn't going to be something like 2112 or something by the Alan Parsons Project. As much as I love Rush, my great computers fill my studio. I can't put them in the halls because I've never bothered hallowing them. Anyway, I'll have more on that later. You'll be able to download it for free and buy it on Bandcamp when it's ready. Number 4. This is a kind of teaser for an episode that'll be coming later, But one of the biggest problems I had when I started getting buried under projects and ideas for projects was simply organizing the damn things into something I could use to track what was going on and where. Right now, I'm working on about 14 projects in some form or another, and I know that number because I created a board on Trello to start tracking them. Some projects there, they share similarities, while others are completely different. I've got 5 writing projects, 4 coding projects, a couple of website things, and some other stuff. The reason I can even give you those numbers and tell you about them is because of Trello. And believe me, Trello is not sponsoring this podcast. I don't do sponsorships on this podcast, so you don't have to, worry about a sneaky advertisement there. But if you've never heard of Trello, it's a website and a service where you can create Kanban boards and track projects, ideas, and so on. And if you've never heard of Kanban, it's a organizational system pioneered by Ono Taichi, a former industrial engineer at Toyota. Without diving into the whole history of Kanban, because, you want to talk about curing your insomnia, I can just tell you that Kanban was developed to schedule things attached to a project. Ono was more concerned with supply chain issues and timing, but the system works well for lots of other things. You can create an overall project, and below that, you have cards that indicate the parts and pieces that need to be done. Now, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but that's what's working for me. Kanban is still used at Toyota, I believe, and it's also used in software development, business, project management, all kinds of stuff. There's a link in the show notes to my public Trello board, if you have the interest. I put it up on the public side of things because, it kind of keeps me working on those things. You will be able to see when I mark things off, though I do confess that I'll likely batch update the board here and there as things get done. So it might go for a while without updates and then suddenly, look at all the progress I've made. You can easily see what a really simple Kanban board looks like. Maybe it'll be useful for something you're working on too. Trello's a free service, so you can give it a shot. But now that I've got a handle on what I'm working on and where things are and how far they are along, it's been a lot less stressful for me. I've not had a freak out recently about, oh my god, where am I on that one thing? So that's kind of nice, and I got that going for me. Number 3. I've been playing around with Python for a while now, but I've never really found anything I wanted to, actually do with it. I mean, I know you can do anything with it. There's an advertisement that I keep seeing on YouTube where a guy tells me that, right after assuring me that Python is where it's at, and I can take this class for less than the cost of takeout. Okay. Thing is you can kind of do anything with it. That's true. What happens if there's nothing that you want to do with it right now? So I fiddled and I futzed and I finally was presented with a couple of projects that were practically perfect for Python. One was at work, and it, a work-related thing where I occasionally needed to test the SIP service on the ILS. Now, if I just totally lost you with that sentence, don't worry. First, an ILS is an integrated library system. It's the software that makes the library work. An ILS allows you to have a catalog of items, a roster of patrons, and the ability to check those items out to those patrons. Whenever you go to the library and check something out, you're using the ILS. There are several different kinds. We happen to use Polaris, which is my ILS of choice and a system I've been using for, close to a couple decades now. There are others, though, and my favorite free and open source ILS is Koha. Links in the show notes if you have the interest. Finally, SIP is a protocol that allows you to send messages to the ILS and have it do things. SIP, or Standard Interchange Protocol, is typically used by things like a self-checkout machine and self-check-in machines and sorters. It's basically kind of an Esperanto for two things that don't speak the same language, but need to converse anyway. Anyway, SIP is just some specifically formatted text strings sent to the ILS, and the ILS will send some specifically formatted text strings back in response. Occasionally, I need to test the call and response with the SIP service to see if something has gone sideways, or just to check the behavior of the ILS. So I whipped up a quick, dirty little Python script to help me do that, because there are a few factors you don't want to screw up, like timestamps, error correction, and category formatting. A SIP chain, you know, the SIP text string itself can be kind of long, and, you know, a typo in there and it just won't work. I mean, usually nothing bad will happen. It just won't work and now you have to retype it. So, yeah, you can totally write them by hand and it might be fine, but I'd rather just use a script, get a result, and move on. Saves money and time, you know? Then I started thinking about an itch that I've wanted to scratch for a while now. I'm an image junkie. I have a thing for JPEGs. I love pictures, and I love pictures of certain subjects. Like, for instance, I love cyberpunk imagery. Big shock, I know. I also love beautiful images of space. I enjoy pictures of retro artwork from worlds that never were to worlds that might yet be. I like comic book art, and I like fine art. And, you know, what I really wanted, I couldn't find. And that was an app or a program or a thing that simply looked at an RSS feed and downloaded the images. That's all. I found things that kind of do this, but there's always something extra that I don't need or something lacking that I do require. Since I get a lot of images from Reddit, I thought it might be a nifty little project to write something that downloads images from Reddit RSS feeds. So I did some fiddling about, and I decided that what I really wanted was to download images from my saved posts RSS feed on Reddit. See, on Reddit, you can save various posts, and these posts go into a special part of your account called, uncreatively, saved links. I rarely save articles to my saved links because anything I save that's an article typically goes to Pocket instead, for reading later or archiving or whatever. Almost everything in my saved links is image-based. And because your saved links section generates an RSS feed, well, you can write some code to get those images from that feed. So I got started. I looked up a few things, kind of figured out how the feed parser module works in Python, tried a few things, failed, did a fair amount of swearing, tried again, achieved marginal success, fixed some bugs, added conditions, and now I have a moderately useful command line app that does one thing. It downloads images from Reddit's RSS feeds. I call it Dr. Rid, because it sounds silly, and because it's an acronym for Dirty Rotten Reddit Image Downloader. It ain't perfect, but I'm still fiddling around with it. If you want to give it a try, there's a link to it on GitHub. Just check the show notes. It's aimed at Python 3, so you'll need that. I've only ever tested it on macOS and Ubuntu Mate, because Python for Windows is kind of one big gigantic freaking mess. It should work on Windows, but you might need to play with it a bit or, you know, fiddle with your Python settings in Windows. I tried doing some Python in Windows and I can make it work, but oof. Anyway, you can feed it any Reddit RSS feed for a subreddit, but it will error out when it doesn't encounter an image. So I just feed it my saved links RSS because I can control that. Oh, and one last caveat. Reddit's saved RSS, saved links RSS feed, it has a limit of 100 items in the feed. Now, you can have more than that, like I did. I had something around 200. And what you'll need to do is have Dr. Rid download the first 100 for you, then unsave those items from your feed, and then have it download the next 100, and so on. I'm doing some work to see if I can mitigate that, but that'll take some time. You can handle saving and navigating pretty easily with the Reddit Enhancement Suite. This is an extension available for Firefox, Chrome, Opera, and Edge. What I use it for is the Greek keyboard shortcuts built in for navigating the Reddit experience. And between the two of these things, I've got something that has saved me so much time with my little hobby of hoarding images, because, you know, it used to take, you know, maybe, you know, an hour sometimes to just empty out my saved links feeds and getting all the images and stuffing them where I want them and stuff. Now I can empty the feed in, you know, last time I did it, it was around 200 some odd images in that feed. I emptied it in less than 5 minutes. So Not bad at all. So check out the show notes if you have the interest. And hey, if you think you might make it better, and I'm sure you can because I'm definitely not a Python developer, you can do something with it yourself. Number two. Back in the days before the ubiquitous internet, before the web, before residential broadband and high-speed Wi-Fi, there was a technology that allowed people to talk to each other, share messages, download files, play games, and do almost everything that a modern social networking service does today. There were differences, of course. This technology didn't have an algorithm that decided what you should see based on interests that it supposedly learned from your activity. It rarely, if ever, advertised anything to you except maybe other things like it. And while it may look primitive by today's standards, this technology bears an elegance absolutely absent from Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, and almost every other single social network in the world. That's because it was put together by people who actually gave a damn about something more than turning the technology into an advertising delivery vehicle. It was called the Bulletin Board System, or BBS. If you've never heard of a BBS and want to know more, or even if you're an older geek like me who was entirely into BBSs in the late 80s and early 90s, check out the fantastic BBS documentary from Jason Scott. He's the digital archivist behind TextFiles.com. Heck, TextFiles.com was born out of the BBS, and it's a massive collection, a treasure trove of text files from BBSs. Links in the show notes, my friends, and for an added bonus, dig on Jason's podcast, too. It's a shorter one, usually about half an hour per episode, and it's highly entertaining and interesting if you're into computers and digital history from the late 20th century. Anyway, back in the day, I ran a BBS in Yakima, Washington called Digital Outback. My friends ran their own boards, each unique in its own way and with names that you never see on anything anymore, because everything has to be so corporate and Silicon Valley startup. There were BBSs called Masonic Conspiracy, Ether, Backwaters of the Mind, Temples of Syrinx, and more. Yakima was, and still kind of is, a town on the edge of nowhere. It's a halfway point between Seattle and Spokane and about 4 hours from Portland, Oregon. I give you a location like that in such a way because the funnest thing to do in Yakima is pack up and leave town. So geeks getting bored got into BBSs, setting up their own boards on their own computers using their own phone lines and dial-up modems. BBSs were great. They were message boards, and there were all kinds of subjects from arguing about movies to arguing about writing code. There were file transfer areas where you could upload and download shareware, images, text files, and more. And you could play games, even against other players at the same time, so long as the system operator, or sysop, had two lines going into the BBS, or more than two lines, and multiple people could be on at once. Needless to say, that was kind of rare, so yeah, that wasn't the norm, but it was possible. You could even talk to the person running the system if they were available and answered the sysop page. Imagine logging into Facebook and paging Mark Zuckerberg so you can tell him something about his system. First, why would you want to do that? Second, who the hell wants to talk to Mark Zuckerberg anyway? There were different software packages for BBSs, but the one that reigned supreme in my area was WWIV, or World War IV BBS. Originally developed by Wayne Bell, World War IV BBS was such a part of my teenage years, my formative years as a computer geek, that I will admit my memories of it are colored with the rosy tint of nostalgia. Anyway, I've been fiddling with setting up a BBS here and there, and playing with different packages. There were two more prominent ones, like Mystic BBS and Synchronet. Both work on Windows and Linux, and Mystic even works on macOS. I've got both of them working, and they're not bad. Not bad at all, but they're not World War IV. And damn it, I really wanted World War IV. Now, World War IV is still available, still under development, and it will run on Windows and Linux. It's been updated to handle incoming calls via Telnet rather than just a phone line, so you'll still need a terminal emulator program to get the most out of it, even though a standard Telnet client would work. With a terminal emulator, you'll get all of those sweet, sweet ANSI graphics and full-color display. And by full-color, I mean something like 16 colors. I personally use one called SyncTerm. But there are a few others. I've added links in the show notes for you if you want to amble down that road. Setting up World War IV was kind of challenging, though. I had issues with Linux, so I couldn't get it to run well there, and I couldn't get it to run at all on a modern Windows system. Windows 10 is just too new. So is Windows 8. Basically, it really likes to have a 32-bit environment which is able to run 16-bit programs. So I installed 32-bit Windows 7 and a virtual machine running in VirtualBox. With a bridge network connection, that VM gets its own IP, and with a bit of setup on the router, you can configure everything to accept incoming Telnet connections. After installing World War IV and doing a bit of configuring, I got it working. I'll need to do some setup, you know, with it, do some customization, make some graphics and ANSI and all that. I also need to get the message boards created and file transfer stuff working. But it'll be ready sooner rather than later, and I'll keep you all updated about it, because this is one of those little things. It's a side project, but I'm so excited to just be fiddling with it. You'll be able to log in and take yourself back a few decades to a time when doing things online wasn't always synchronous, but it was a heck of a lot more fun than Facebook, and had 100% fewer Nazis than Twitter. Number 1. Back there when we were talking about Python and Polaris ILS, I left out some details on purpose. Mostly because they didn't pertain to anything actually related to Python, so it made sense to shove them to the side. Anyway, a few years back, Polaris was purchased by a company called Innovative Interfaces Incorporated, known in the library world as Innovative or Triple I. Before then, Polaris was an independent company, and every year they had a get-together of sorts where librarians and libraries who used the software would come together in one place for a conference. It was called the Polaris Users Group, or PUG. It's a pretty standard but smallish library conference, much smaller than ALA Annual, which is absolutely huge and massive. There'd be breakout sessions, classes, networking, drinking, and so on. After Innovative brought the company, they folded the PUG into the Innovative Users Group, which I have actually heard some people call IUG, and I seriously have no idea why. IUG is a much bigger conference because Innovative is a much bigger company, especially since it bought Polaris. Innovative owns something like 4 different ILS solutions. I mean, there's Polaris, Millennium, Sierra, and Virtua. So the yearly IUG annual conference is not only bigger, but there's something for each customer, and there's more of a worldwide audience since Innovative is a worldwide company. I love this conference because I get more out of it in 1 hour than I do bigger conferences like ALA or PLA conference or whatever. And that's because, as a systems librarian, everything is pretty much aimed specifically at what I do. I've presented at the conference before, and I'm thrilled to announce that I'll be presenting again this year, too. They're still nailing down times and stuff, but the conference runs from April 23rd through the 26th, with the main conference starting on the 24th. I've been getting things ready for that, figuring out my presentation, trying to dodge PowerPoint and Keynote, even though I'm pretty sure I won't be able to, and just get all the paperwork filled out, flights booked, hotel reserved, all of that stuff. But here's the kicker. The topic of my presentation was going to be a topic for an episode of the show. Then I got the email saying that my topic was accepted, and well, that kind of threw a wrench into things. I don't want to reveal too much about it just yet, because quite frankly, this thing is still baking. And I want to get things better prepared before I start mouthing off about it, so I'll let you all in on it as soon as things are ready. And hey, there's a halfway decent chance that I'll record the audio of the presentation too. Right then. So if you think I've just been sitting around on my backside doing nothing, well, I hope this little catch-up changed your mind. The good news is that projects have led to show topics that I literally did not have before last month, so there are some projects that I didn't even mention here that I will be talking about on future episodes of this very show. And I'm thrilled to be back sharing more techie, geeky library stuff with you, And I'll also be packing the show with some more cyberpunk goodness. So thanks for sticking with me. Stay tuned for more. And hey, thanks again for sticking with the show. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. Hey, I thank you for tuning in, for sticking with the show, and I hope you enjoyed this little catch-up with us. So you know that I'm not just ignoring the show. I really love doing this. It's just been so crazy busy in the last couple months that it's just, you know, the show has unfortunately fallen by the wayside because of it. But the good news is I've got some things organized. I've actually got a system going where I can keep track of things. And literally, there are projects I didn't even talk about on this episode that will become future episodes of the show. So more contents are coming, along with some great ideas that I have for folding some cyberpunk content and media into the show itself. So thanks for sticking with me. Stay tuned, folks. There is more to come. The song you're currently digging on right now is Stardrift by yours truly, Daniel Messer. At the beginning of the show, you also heard another song by me that I called Optimus L'Chaim. It's a silly little song that I just fiddled about with and actually liked it enough to press the save button and keep it. So you'll find some links in the show notes for those if you have the interest. The stinger music between the sections, that was from a thing called Andreas Theme. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, by the genius that is Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Good stuff from that guy. That guy is a godsend to the internet, the podcasting and YouTube world. So I thank him for that, and I hope I got that right. There doesn't seem to be an apostrophe, so I don't think it's Andrea's theme. I think it's Andrea's theme. So there you go. If you like it, go check it out. There's much more to the song than you heard. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by the Internet Archive at archive.org, making the internet so much better by saving so much of the internet. The people at archive.org are out there saving everything from websites to manuals to old videos and just all kinds of content. My favorite, of course, is some of the video games that they have saved. You can check that out and just play them right there on the Internet Archive webpage. They're absolutely fantastic. A few days ago, I was showing my kids the Oregon Trail, and yes, they all died of dysentery because that's what you do in the Oregon Trail. So check that out at archive.org, the Internet Archive, hosting and saving so much of the internet and podcasts like this and podcasts that are nothing like this at all. Thank you so much. If you want to connect with me online, well, I highly suggest that you do that. I'm available in a few places, but one of them will be disappearing, as I did mention before. If you want to keep going with the Facebook thing for a little while, I'm still at facebook.com/cyberpunklibrarian. You can also listen to this show on YouTube at youtube.com/cyberpunklibrarian. But if you actually want to talk to me, connect with me, and send a message to me, well, you have not one, not two, but three avenues to go down there, my lovelies. You can hit me up on Twitter, where I am at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's kind of like librarian, but it starts with a B. You can also find me on that newfangled Mastodon network, which I've been playing with and actually kind of like so far. I mean, it just seems to be a whole lot better than Twitter. It just, you know, I just kind of dig on it. So I am Cyberpunk Librarian at mastodon.social. You can find me there. And if you want to follow me on that network, that's fine too. I will likely follow you back because you'll see that I'm not following too many people right now. And if you want to go with the good old-fashioned SMTP method of sending me an email, well, that's an availability too. You can hit me up at cyberpunklibrarian@protonmail.com. And with that, let's bring this thing to a close. I thank you again for tuning in, and I will see you on the next episode. So take care until then, my lovelies, and just remember that you don't have to be high-tech to live low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.